Washington isn't broken because of which party is in charge. It's broken because the people who were supposed to protect the system are now the ones exploiting it. We need Americans who are willing to step up, tell the truth, do the work, and step aside when the job is done. That's independent candidate John Thorpe's argument. And Tennessee's 7th District, he's staking a campaign on independence from political party control. He's pledging a different path, elevating honest service over ambition, addressing the culture of corruption in Washington, pushing for policies to help more Americans begin building wealth, and redirecting tax revenue to areas that will actually help people. In today's conversation, we'll get to know John, his experience campaigning, the reason for the upcoming special election in Tennessee 7th, and of course, his thoughts on the central issue of money in politics. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy the episode.
Have you ever wondered how our political system became so intertwined with big money? Well, it wasn't always like this. Decades ago, there were limits and regulations in place to prevent corruption and ensure fair elections. But then came a series of pivotal court decisions that established that money equals speech, setting the stage for the wealthy to have an outsized influence on politics. It's no wonder that over 75% of Americans believe it's time to take big money out of politics. Join us as we explore how money influences U.S. politics in profound and sometimes unsettling ways. The 75 Podcast starts now.
Welcome to the 75 Podcast. I'm Michael Hahn. I'm the host of the show, founder of the 75 Coalition. And today, I'm pleased to welcome John Thorpe to the show. John's running in the special election for Tennessee's 7th Congressional District. And John, welcome to the show. Pleased to have you here today.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure being invited, and I look forward to our conversation.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I just mentioned you're running for Congress, which is a huge step for anybody to take. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your values, for just letting people know who you are.
Well, I guess the short version is that years ago, pre 9/11, peacetime military, I joined the Army, 99. Spent a little over 10 years and saw an interesting perspective of the country and politics in general from that perspective. While I was there, I was a voting assistance officer, so I was, busy getting people registered to vote and participating in that. And despite that, subsequent to the election of 2000, I don't know if you remember that with Bush Gore, the hanging chads. That just kind of put a bad taste in my mouth, and I turned towards the independence philosophy, I guess, if you will, and that was the last time I voted. I wasn't apathetic per se, because again, I was actively getting people involved. I was involved with think tanks and philosophical and political organizations, but I just could never bring myself to vote for the lesser of two evils, as we're often told that we must. So, looking back, I think a good way to put that is that I swore an oath to the Constitution, not to a party or a politician. So I just felt like I didn't owe anybody allegiance. So if it wasn't best for the country, I wasn't going to do it. Fast forward a number of years, and I now have two young boys at home, and I could no longer look myself in the mirror, I suppose, and say, "Sorry, guys, I'm doing the best that I can to protect your future and ensure that you guys inherit a good, or maybe not a good, but a better country." I think we should always try to strive to do our best to leave things in a better condition than we inherited them, and I don't think we've done that.
So that's
no, yeah.
I think a little ahead of myself.
I can see. I can see that, you know, you're somebody that cares deeply for a while now. Going back, you know, 25 years since that. That I was, I mean, back then I was a younger guy. I didn't even know what the Changing Had probably was at that point in time. But it basically was the thing, the situation in Florida that got them to stop counting the ballots, I think, at the and decided the election, right? Right. And so, yeah, it's a kind of been at this system for now, or been disgruntled with the system, it seems like, for a while now, and stepping in to kind of do something about it.
Yeah, and I don't know if I was necessarily disgruntled so much as I felt like my voice didn't make a difference, didn't matter. Nobody cared. Even if, so I started studying economics and I eventually got a master's degree in 2013. Statistics, you know, I'm sure everybody's heard of the colorful quote about statistics. But the probability of a person's vote making a difference, especially in a presidential election, are effectively zero. So it's more of a symbolic thing that you're doing. You're trying to tell politicians and the government in general what you want as a person. So if you're voting for the lesser of two evils, you're not really communicating anything effective. You're not communicating what you want. You're basically communicating what you don't want. And that's not a way to govern. And that doesn't pass on true representation. That's just, you know, avoiding misery or attempting to avoid misery. And then we all know that even if a politician campaigns on something, there's nothing that holds them accountable to that. And even the best of intention people, once they get to Washington, oftentimes are corrupted by just the system itself. And I'm sure we're going to get into that. But so I wasn't disgruntled per se. It was more that I just didn't think my voice mattered. And I think a lot of people don't think that their voice matters. And they sit back and say, why bother? Because number one, you're not going to listen to me anyway. Number two, there's no candidates that I really believe in and are worthwhile of my effort to avoid, you know, a lot of times we have to skip work or get out of work, or it's a financial hardship for some people. I think there was a recent push, I don't know, maybe it's been going back for many years, to make Election Day a national holiday. I don't see any reason why that wouldn't be a good idea, because if it's such an integral and important part of our life, and sadly it is, I think I would like to see the day where politics basically has an almost zero effect on our day-to-day operations, but we're not there yet. So in the meantime, we should make it so everybody has ample opportunity to get out there and do their civic duties.
That makes sense to me. Right. Let more people vote. Right. That's your stance, instead of the seemingly what the current position is for a lot, is to kind of reduce the numbers of voting, make it harder to vote.
Right.
It seems like them, it's been over the course.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's always been like options. That. But yeah. Actual options. That'd be good. And so was there a specific moment that kind of like catapulted you into make the decision to run for office?
Yeah. It's something pretty silly. I don't like sharing it, cause it's so dumb. And it was a cumulative thing. It's like the straw. It literally was a straw that broke the camel's back. It was the continuing resolution. And it's funny because we just had another one in there who got a shutdown because of another CR. But this was the one back in March. And it kind of, I guess, made me think back to that hanging chad thing of 2000, where the news would just shift ever so slightly. It said, okay, well, now the courts are sort of leaning towards this way. And everybody that was going to be benefiting, the party that was benefiting from that decision, would say, ah, see, you have to follow the courts. And everybody on the other side said, oh, you don't, those courts, they don't know what they're talking about. They're just trying to affect the election. They're trying to skew the election. And then the courts would, well, maybe not. Maybe we need to go the other way. And it was like a cartoon where the people are running from one side to the other. Like, no, now we, and they would literally switch. So the people who were supporting the courts now are saying, no, those courts, they're just trying to be activist judges and affect the outcome of the election. And I'm thinking, do people realize that they're literally switching sides on a sometimes hour by hour basis? And it just blew my mind.
That's what happened here.
With the continuing resolution, literally the continuing resolution was Biden's spending bill. It was almost verbatim. And Thomas Massie was the only, you should have seen all the Republicans voting against it and all the Democrats voting for it. And it was almost the exact opposite. There was only one Democrat that voted for it and one Republican that voted against it. That was Thomas Massie. And Trump said, how dare you stand on principle? I'm going to primary you next year. And I thought, man, we're right back in 2000 again. And so I said, this is dumb. Somebody has to do something about it. And there's that famous phrase that we always, it gets us in trouble. Somebody should do something about that. And then that was where the look in the mirror, I'm like, well, I guess I'm somebody.
Your hand up.
Yeah,
it's put your hand up, man. Credit. No, it's huge. It's huge. And I think it, you know, it takes a lot of integrity to do that as a grassroots guy that doesn't have experience in the political. You're not a politician, right? So you didn't come up through the system of knowing how to run for office, right? Necessarily.
No idea.
I'm aware of at least, right? Yeah. So it's a big step. And that's one of the things that we've been preaching here about, like, what's needed and to give people that confidence to try and do it, because we got a problem and we need people that recognize it to step up. And so thank you for putting your name in the ring. And, you know, and trying to do something about it. So I know I appreciate it. And when we're doing what we saw, I came across your name running for this. And I looked at your website and I said, this is somebody that we should talk to that's addressing on your campaign website. So many candidates don't address this big situation of just corruption in the system. And you did. So what's going on in kind of Tennessee 7th right now? Why is there a special election?
So the incumbent, a guy named Mark Green, actually he hadn't announced at the time that I started running, but somewhere around May, I think, if memory serves, he announced that he was going to retire early, which is interesting because he had announced before the election last year that, well, maybe I'm not going to run. And then somehow, I guess he got pressured into it. In retrospect, I wonder if there was some backdoor insider dealings thing saying, like, well, let's just, we don't have anyone better to run because it's so late in the process. Go ahead and run and then you can quit early type of thing. It's plausible. I don't know. I don't want to be conspiracy theorist. But anyway, he announced in May that he was going to retire early at a future unknown date. But all he knew for certain was he was going to wait until after the vote for the Big Beautiful Bill, make sure that passed. Conflict of interest there. I don't know. Maybe kind of seems a little shady to me. But in any case, he retired officially in July, and we've been unrepresented ever since. And so they announced a special election primary is going to be in 2 days from this recording. And the general election is December 2nd, and you wouldn't believe how many people in this district have no idea that there is a election coming up this year.
That's kind of gets right into your original point about making it either, you know, more difficult to vote or wanting the numbers to be down. So, you know, I was wondering about kind of the TV advertisements. Are there a lot of ads going on TV in Tennessee right now?
I don't watch TV, so I can't say for certain, but I saw a single TV once for about 5 minutes while I was in the waiting room at a doctor's office, and there were two ads. One was one of the candidates who is just as horrible of an actor as I am. I cringe every time I have to do those ads. And then there was another one that was an attack ad on a different candidate. So, yeah, I've been told by many people that they are all over their plastering, even on Google and everywhere you can imagine. There's a ton of money rolled into this race.
Right. So is it maybe that people aren't aware that the special election is coming up so soon, and you would think it's just more the normal course?
I think if you're not someone who's watching TV, then you're not going to know. I don't know what the TV viewership is these days, but I think that has dropped a lot. And generally, it's going to be people who are younger generations that are completely unaware. I found the older ones tend to be the main viewers of classical television, so they're going to be exposed to that. I don't know the exact demographics, but there's a significant number of people who have no clue.
So where did Mark Green go? Because that's kind of like an interesting thing for somebody just to step to run. And maybe, like you said, you're not sure the exact reasons why, because he had mentioned he maybe wasn't going to stay the full term anyway. But so he steps down just after winning, basically. Mm-hmm. And where did he go? Why did he step down? Do you know?
He is I believe he's a consultant or I don't think he's employed, but he's a consultant or something with an export import company and a foreign company that deals pretty significantly with U.S. trade. His claim was that it's going to be helping Americans out, which it very well may, but I don't think you're going to step down mid career when if it's not going to be a very lucrative opportunity for you. And I don't necessarily have anything against that. I think we should be able to switch careers anytime we want, but the optics of it, and like you said, doing it midstream in a session, a congressional session, is a little bit questionable.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because it seems secretive. I went to look because I was curious, right? So I knew we were going to be doing this interview, wanted to do some research into the race, and I came back with really no reporting on why he stepped down, except for to go to a private industry, and no discussion about where that was or what he was going to be doing. So that's more information than I got from doing Google search. And it's just raised a question. We talk about the need for transparency. And people are aware of this, you know, politicians going into the industries that they're supposed to be regulating and vice versa. They call it the Washington revolving door, right? Mm-hmm. As they jump between leadership roles in both or get a high paying job on the outside after they leave office. It seems like this might be, and I don't know, this might be a case of Washington revolving door to the outsider, me, you know, looking. Or others probably looking in and no reporting on it. It's fascinating that it's not a story of, you know, anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And even before he officially retired, there was a lot of question on where he was going, because he's supposed to disclose that. And he did to the ethics committee, but they basically just said, yeah, well, there's nothing dirty or bad about this. He's fine.
Which, take our word for it.
Yeah. Trust us.
What's the big secret? What's the big secret?
They've never hidden anything from us, right?
Okay. So that's interesting to start, right? Triggers the special election, which is coming up. The primary, which you mentioned, is Tuesday, October 7th. Mm-hmm. You're on the ballot no matter what, because you're an independent. So you're not tied to political parties. What are some of the dynamics in Tennessee 7th in this race that you feel, you know, right now, that are maybe the conflict between the two parties? What are people positioning themselves as? What are the talking points? What can you, you know, talk about Tennessee 7th? What's important today?
Well, it is the state in general has been leaning Republican for quite a few years, at least most of the state. They, as with, you know, has been in the news across multiple different areas. The last cycle, 2022, I believe, is when they did it. They They changed the districts around a little bit, as they are wont to do. You know, and this just kind of rolls right into there are so many different avenues that both parties utilize to maintain their privilege and hold over the power structure. In this case, you know, gerrymandering. They adjusted this district to carve a little bit out of downtown Nashville, just enough to make other nearby districts safely in the red, so to speak, and wasn't enough to make this one a nervous or a uncertain win for the Republicans as well. So Mark Green had been winning this district handily, 20 points or something like that, for quite a few years. And it's a little tight now. They just posted the early voting tallies, and it is statistically even, Democrats versus Republicans. Now, that doesn't necessarily translate directly to the general, but if the turnout for early voting for the primaries is any indication, I would be a little bit nervous if I was a Republican right now. And so they're probably going to be pouring even more money into it after the primaries. They're going to have to suddenly, you know, get behind whatever their chosen candidate is. And it'll be interesting to see how they change their messaging suddenly from these attack ads to, oh, he's the best guy ever. Overnight, which of course they're going
right.
to.
Gotcha. But you're talking about the parties attacking each other's yes. candidates for the primary, right? So right now yeah. there's a candidate. I could be wrong, but Martin Van Epps, is that right? Is that
Matt Van Epps? He has had he just recently got endorsement from Trump. He got endorsed by Mark Green, the incumbent, by the governor. He's got a lot of endorsements. He's definitely the clear, the chosen horse for the party elites, so to speak. And most of the attack ads have been against a guy named Jody Barrett, who is currently in the state legislative body. And he likes to call himself one of the people. And who knows? I would say those are probably the two front runners currently. Who's going to end up winning is anybody's guess. But they're going to have to kind of coalesce behind one particular person or the other.
Yeah, I wonder if Mark Green's endorsement should matter after stepping aside and taking
yeah, probably
a job.
Not.
I mean, as a voter, you know, should that actually be a hurt? You know, I don't know. But I don't know, Mark. He served the country for a long time, but in the military, but it's just kind of calls into question when you leave midstream for a job in private. You know, what are you doing? What's your motivation mm-hmm. there? It's just interesting to me. So would love to talk to him. Love to have him on the podcast too. That'd be really cool.
Sure.
As we're growing. So how about on the Democratic side? On the Democratic Party side. What do you see there? What do you sense there? What are they talking about? What are their main? Because I'm going to get into what you care. So I'm just kind of curious just to set the stage with this first.
So there were 11 Republicans running, one bowed out, so they're down to 10 now, I think, unless some more have. But and then there are four Democrat candidates, and they range from someone who has never run before and sunk something close $300,000-$400,000 or something of his own money into the campaign alone. And there are sitting legislators on the ballot as well. I think it's kind of anybody's guess there. I feel like the front runner is a current legislator named Afton Bain. She seems to be getting a lot of grassroots support, and
she came up too. I saw her. She seemed like she's a money out of politics also, which had me kind of interested. I don't know the other folks, but I did see that she might be money out of politics too. So I like that. You know, I want to see more of that. That's what we're talking about, though.
Yeah, regardless of where it comes from.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So that one's more of a toss up. So what makes you different? Why you over the whoever the party picks?
Well, how much pick. Time do you have?
I mean, I said that, but I should have said the voters pick. But really, you know, it's almost like who the party picks do, where they put their money behind that person. But
well, the quick and easy way to answer that is no matter who you elect, whether it's a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent, they're going to be the most junior member of the Congress of this session. They're going to be literally the bottom of the barrel. You know, everybody, there's a hierarchy among all institutions, and Congress is no different. The difference between the two major parties is that when they show up, they have a party leadership structure that they have to follow. There's going to be leadership that tells them what bills to support, whether or not they can even put forward a bill of their own. Oftentimes, they are literally handed a bill and say, here you go. This is a bill that you are sponsoring. They had no idea. That was the first time they ever saw it. And suddenly, congratulations. And that's if you're doing well. So there's literally a tit for tat structure that we see in Congress. And that will be either party that does that. And so right off the bat, you have to ask the question, if they have to follow so closely the party line, party ideology, party leadership, what happens if you're faced with something like, you know, love him or hate him, Thomas Massie, for like I said earlier, that continuing resolution, you say, no, this is Biden's spending bill. It's not good for the people in my district. And you stand up for it, despite the fact that the party all the way up, in his case, up to the president said, no, this is something we want. You have to have a lot of conviction and a lot of trust that your constituents are going to support you, because if you buck the party system, then you are up for eviction immediately. And whether or not you stay in there, you also will find yourself being evicted from committees. You'll find yourself restricted from co-sponsoring things. And there's a lot of ostracization is a huge factor there. So as an independent, to come full circle, I don't have that. I have literally no party structure to tell me what bills to vote for. So the only thing that matters is whether or not it's good for the district or for the people at general. And they can't say, oh, well, if you don't vote for this, I'm going to primary. They're going to put people against me regardless. So I just have to do the best job for the people, period. And that's pretty, that's freeing. That is a very, very good place to be, because finally, for once, assuming I make it into Congress, people would finally have an open and clear voice that is on their side.
Nice. Yeah. I think the party politics is something that people are highly frustrated with right now. So that is the biggest separator. I think so. I understand your answer, you know, without even getting into kind of policy positions, right? So let's ask on the policies. Big, beautiful bill. It's got a lot of things in it. That's why it's big, right? Yep. The adjective used could be, could vary. Would you call it beautiful, or would you call it something else?
Oh, no, it is not beautiful at all. And the problem is not necessarily with that bill specifically. It's any time they package bills together. I am a firm believer that there should be one issue, one bill, one vote, period, on everything, up or down on every single. If they have to vote 1,000 times a year, then that's fine. That's their job. That's what they should be doing. Because what they end up doing is they package all these things that are completely unrelated together into a behemoth omnibus bill, which is, by the way, contrary to their own rules. There's no law for it, but House or Congressional, I don't remember if it's Congressional House rules. I'm a little bit vague on that, but should probably look that up. They specify no more than, I think it's 12, but I don't know. There's a certain number of things per packaged vote. And so what you end up having is say the big beautiful bill, for example. If you say no, I don't want to vote for it, they'll find something in there like, money for veterans. Oh, you're against money for veterans? Look at this. This guy is voting against it because he hates veterans. And then you're like, no, if you put that outside and on its own, I'll vote for it. But it's these other three things that I'm voting against. And it's just a way to play politics. It's a cheap shot of forcing things down our throat. And this is what has happened for years and years and years and years, regardless of which party is in power.
Yeah. So I get that too. I think that it also becomes so long to read. So it's too quick. It makes the American people feel that that you're just pushing things through that are the agenda of something else or somebody else, because how could all these Congress people possibly have the ability to get through, I don't know, 1,000 pages in a short period of time? It's just not feasible.
So, wasn't it Pelosi a number of years ago? The only way we'll know what's in it is if we pass it. I don't remember what bill that was, but it was 1,000-page something or other. Like, yeah, that, they think we're stupid.
It just doesn't matter, you know. So it just doesn't matter what you think, basically, because, you know, I think it gets to the heart of so many things. Again, it's what we've been saying for, you know, this podcast and the 75 is at the center of this is the system, mm-hmm. is the system that we've now evolved into, as I like to say, because it hasn't always been this way. And so money in politics, right? And the core reason for money in politics are two things. It's the Supreme Court's decisions in Citizens United that everybody knows. And then Buckley versus Valeo from 1976, right? And that's why we're called the 75. It's the year before Buckley versus Valeo. And in Buckley, they say, the Supreme Court says that essentially money equals speech. Money is speech. What's your opinion on that topic? Is money speech?
Well, I think money enables and amplifies speech. Anybody can walk down to the corner and do their, you know, the historic soapbox speech. But the question is reach. If you're simply sitting on a corner, you're going to hit a couple hundred, maybe 1,000 people. But if you have the money to do that exact same speech and amplify it over the airwaves and across the internet and in front of potentially millions of people, money is a way to make some speech more effective than other speech. And so I don't think it's free speech at all. Mm-hmm. I think it would be the counter of free speech. Free speech would be making everybody's speech basically equal access to the airwaves. And we're in kind of difficult territory here, because on one hand, you know, you don't want to just say, well, everybody has equal access to all this stuff. But in this case, because I don't think you do, now you're getting to, these are oftentimes private entities and you can't, force them to air things that are arguably. Well,
we're on the air right now.
Right, exactly. And
this is free. This is free, right?
Well, is it? I don't know.
How much is how much can this could reach? This could reach international.
If you're not paying for it, you are the commodity, right?
It doesn't cost you anything, right?
Well, my point is that if we spent a couple hundred thousand dollars advertising and putting little clips
advertising
in front of people, we would
see, that's
then
the word
make
I like to use.
This. Yeah. It's advertising. And that is the question of whether or not in politics specifically, is there a place for advertising? And it's hard. That is a very, very difficult path to go down, because on one hand you don't want to restrict somebody's ability to be clever and amplify a voice naturally or organically. If your message is so good that a million people share it themselves freely of their own free will, is that as equivalent of somebody paying to have a million people share it?
Not to me.
I wouldn't think so, but the result is the same. And so
I guess what I'm saying is that money, right, is currency. It's an asset, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you can use to do things with, right? You can give to people to make them do things as well, right? Is that the same as speech?
No.
That's my point. So I know it enables the advertising of things. It buys things. It buys people. It buys influence. It buys stuff. It's an asset. Just like if I was to give you, or somebody was to give you, a very expensive watch. Watch is not money, but again, it's something that is a value. It's an asset that can. So I think we need more discussion about this topic of money. Is money speech? And what is advertising as well? Because it gets at the heart, I think, of one of the obstacles that you're confronting. You've got people that are running against you that have a lot of this money to use to advertise against you.
Yeah.
But your message, although it could resonate with people, right, it doesn't resonate because it's drowned out by the advertising dollars or by the other way of the system. So, you know, I dream of a system in the future where we can do things like this on air for free. What's to stop a YouTube debate for free and letting people then share it and talk about it? So I'll ask you, do you think that, like, in the system that we have, do we need a constitutional amendment to reform the system? Is that something that you're supportive of?
Yeah, I think most people would, and here's a good proxy for that. There was a debate that was hosted. Granted, it was by a private organization, so they're free to make whatever rules that they want for it. But one of the it was only for Republicans, and in order to qualify for the stage, you had to have raised, whether that was externally or self-funding, at least $250,000. So if that's not a pay-to-play system, I don't know what is. And that doesn't encourage options or choices for the people, if that's the goal of politics. It has nothing to do with best representation. That merely has to do with how good are you at getting funding. And some people can say, well, the best messages will get the best funding. And that's not necessarily true, because if you are, say, one of the guys who self-funded $500,000, you have to somewhere, it doesn't matter, even if it's an external, if it's somebody that's outside and putting $500,000 into this race, you have to expect at least that much benefit from that action. Otherwise, you're not going to invest that money. So it begs the question of what is the purpose of putting that much money into it? And does that start to skew the incentive structure of the candidates and the representatives themselves? Which I think the clear answer is absolutely. So yes, I think we need some sort of, probably an amendment, because it'd still be open for interpretation, but it would have a whole lot more teeth than just a law that we passed. And something has to be done to start controlling outside influence.
What do you think about affordability in Tennessee?
Affordability?
Yeah, like cost of living affordability in Tennessee.
Oh, it varies wildly from place to place, but I think Tennessee kind of is in the same boat as most are. We have rampant inflation. Since 2000, the value of the dollar has decreased 25%. That's huge. You know, there's a lot of agriculture here in Tennessee, and input prices are through the roof. They continue to go higher and higher. Meanwhile, the market prices for their stock, their output goods, have continued to decline. Throw in Trump's tariff wars, and you know, now if soybeans are all over the news. They're not selling any soybeans whatsoever to China, where that used to be they were the biggest external buyer of soybeans. Like, there are just, it's one thing after another. People are being hit at the grocery stores, rents are going higher, everything is higher, and I think there's a lag in wages and salaries, and there's a lot of uncertainty.
Do you see any kind of connection between the issue of the government and the rising costs, like this money in politics kind of issue, and you know, the fact that these costs continue to go up? Is the affordability crisis at all tied to money in politics?
Oh, absolutely. You just have to look. What do they say? Follow the money. Who are the big lobbyists? Who are the big donors to congressional campaigns? And you know, look at any of the big spenders, pharmaceutical industry and healthcare industry, and look at the costs. Those costs have just gone way through the roof, and there's not really any true attempt to make any changes that are going to be helpful for the people, because if they do too much reform, then it's going to hurt the people that are giving them money. And so there's a very clear disincentive to actually represent the people. And so I think at risk of, you know, alienating some people, we don't have a democracy. We don't have a republic. It's a cronyist. We have a cronyism system. It's about who can pay the government to get the most benefits.
Right. So you're somebody that recognizes the issue. It's clear.
Yeah. That's potentially.
Are any of the other candidates running in the special election recognizing this issue? Do they highlighting it like you are?
I don't think so. The debates that I've been on, they will continue to say, you know, oh, we need to pass more laws to do this and spend some more money to help Medicaid and whatever, Medicare. And, you know, we increase the minimum wage and do all these things, but they ignore the fundamental elephant in the room, which is there is a massive spending problem that Congress just spends left and right, you know, like drunken sailors, because they have so many people that they have to pay back and they can't cut anything. I mean, look at the DOGE cuts, $9 billion. We have a $2 trillion current year deficit, and they cut $2 billion. That's less than 0.5%. That's like being faced with bankruptcy and you canceled Netflix. Okay, cool. Good job, bud. They're clowns. They're not serious. They are not serious at all. And that's fundamentally the problem. And I think, you know, this 75, there's independent coalitions out there. There's a ton of people that are beginning to, and I don't want to say wake up, because that implies that we were sleeping. It's not. It's that there's a clarity. There's an emerging clarity across the United States that has me very, very hopeful and kind of optimistic, to be perfectly honest, that people are beginning to recognize that we've been not only lied to, but we've been betrayed. Congress has one job, and that is to represent the people. We've been told that they would maintain the value of our dollar and have some sort of semblance of a future for us, and that's been a lie. They've stolen that from us. They continue to steal from the future to pay for today, and they've continued to meddle overseas and do with everything they can with other people while ignoring everybody at home. And people feel cheated, and rightfully so, because that is not their job. Their job is to represent us. And from your perspective, which is not far from the truth at all, it's just one of many roots of the same trees, is the money involved in it is poisoning. It's horrible. We have got to do something about
it. The kicker is, people think it's always been this way, and that's where, you know, what we're trying to do is educate on the side that it actually hasn't always been this way. It feels like it has, but through the course of the nation's history, obviously it didn't start this way. right? So we know when the country was first started, this was not the way it was set up, with the money controlling everything. But Congress, post-Watergate, because of Nixon's campaign violations and fundraising illegally at the time, which now today, it was illegal then, now would be totally legal. So the Supreme Court in 76 changed the rules of the game, right? And that's what we mentioned earlier. That's why the 75 got its name from. So, oh gosh. Yeah. It's interesting that not a lot of people else in the race are not aware of this the way that you are. I think they probably are, but just refuse to address it. And to me, that makes you different than everybody else. And to me, it makes you the number one candidate on the ballot for the voters of Tennessee 7th. You're an individual that recognizes this issue, is willing to discuss this issue right here today, right? Live, so everybody can hear that, no, this is a problem. And so you're the candidate that wants to try and solve the problem with, you know, said supportive of a constitutional amendment. And there's actually a few that are out there already today. So when you win, you know, if you win, hopefully you do, you'll have your opportunity to be a history maker and right the wrong of the Supreme Court from 76, from Citizens United, and from a host of other cases where they just tore apart our regulations and our rules around what is legal and illegal in terms of accepting money into the elections, right? So I think that makes you the candidate in this election myself. So we didn't even get into other policies, but you know, that's my number one. That's my number one. I want it to be more people's number one. What is your number two? What's your number two or your number three policies, so people know, you know, more about where you stand on things?
Well, I don't know if I mentioned my number one actually would be a balanced budget. I think everything stems from there, and that would begin to address as well, because it's going to be hard to get any of these to pass. But and they're all intertwined. So I think a balanced budget amendment would lead naturally into reform of political, and that you really can't do. I don't know how you can. It's like saying, who's your favorite kid? You know, they're both my favorite. So I think towards the top, we have got to address the budget. The government shouldn't have a pass, some magical fairy wand, because they get to ignore economic law somehow, which is not the case, which we can see continually by all of our prices going up. The same way that families and businesses have to work within a balanced budget and the laws of economics, I think the government does too, because they end up destroying our children's future, and that's unacceptable. They don't have that right. Everything kind of just falls under that as well. So, you know, healthcare, like I talked about briefly earlier, that is a massive one. There's a bunch of things that we can do that would fix healthcare as an issue. And I would actually say my number two is a leveling of the playing field for Americans. So again, go back to your issue. There's so much money in politics that literally the laws oftentimes are written by lobbyists. The lobbyist will show up at a congressman's door and say, "Here you go. We wrote this bill for you. We think you'd be perfect." And they'll look it over and, "Oh yeah, that's really cool." And they say, "Yeah, wink, wink. We'll give you $250,000 next year for your campaign." And by the way, that's literally what happens. But those crazy. Are written by these big corporations who oftentimes
think
these
tanks,
bills will
right lobbying groups.
Yeah, and think tanks, and they get their money from the big guys as well.
Right.
And oftentimes they'll have the effect of increasing costs of the businesses, but they absorb the bigger the company, the more likely that they are able to absorb those costs. So who it ends up hurting are the smaller businesses and their competition. So it lowers competition, reduces the number of options for people, raises prices for families and consumers, And it just hurts everybody. Workers have fewer options to go to. They're now not competing with the same number of people, so they don't have to pay as much. They don't have to give as many benefits. There's a number of things. So what I would say is just arbitrarily saying, $1 million. If your business makes less than $1 million profit, then you shouldn't spend more than an hour doing your taxes. If you're spending more than an hour, it's too complex. It should be basically a flat rate on whatever your profits are, and period, you're done. Now you can, and it'll be a lower rate too, by the way. There's no reason whatsoever why a mom and pop, grocery store or a transmission shop should be paying a higher effective tax rate than, say, Amazon or Walmart or Google or whoever. Who famously was Amazon, and I think Apple too, had like a 0% tax rate effectively. They can hire those armies of accountants and lawyers, and the smaller guys can't. So if you lower the tax rate for those smaller businesses, they are able to keep a bigger chunk of their capital in the business. They can reinvest into the business, make it bigger. They can hire new employees. They can pay more competitive wages. We get the mandate for benefits off the companies, and there's kind of an unfair advantage too. You have I think it's 500. I don't remember the exact number. There's a number of employees. If anything more than whatever number, you are required to provide healthcare to your employees. On the face of that, this is, well, that's good. They should. But what that ends up doing is giving them kind of an unfair advantage for those larger companies, because again, they can absorb those prices. And now if you're looking at working for Bill's Automotive or Amco or who are, I don't know, these big ones, and you're getting basically the exact same wage rate, but you get the benefits on the side, you're going to go with one of the benefits. And so it hurts smaller businesses who are the backbone of America. So we need to make it simpler, hire more people. That would have the effect of having a huge wave of new entrepreneurial activity and new businesses and larger, more better competition, basically kind of even the playing field.
So in terms of taxes, tax revenue in the budget, what is your feeling on how America or our government prioritizes the spending? So we put a lot of money into I guess the Pentagon budget, which a lot of it goes then overseas to foreign countries to like maintain their governments in place, I think. So when I think about the taxes that I spend and I consider where it's going, it kind of pains me a little bit to know that so much of it is going overseas. And it, that has not changed. So I believe in kind of, just in principle, America first, like investing here to make our small towns, strengthen them again to what they were. I just don't see it happening right now. I see it still slipping the other direction more and more as major companies consolidate and kill small town America and kill small businesses. And then a lot of money going overseas, and we've been supporting foreign governments for a long time. Nothing new, nothing new there. But the amount of money that we're sending out. How do you prioritize, or how would you think to prioritize that? Would you continue status quo, or would you redistribute our tax dollars in a way that would make it feel like, okay, we're gonna do some things to help rebuild small town America?
Well, again, we spend way, 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 way too much. So there's no reason whatsoever to be giving money that we're borrowing from other countries to other countries. It makes no sense on any level whatsoever. So I would end that. I would prioritize that as a very high need to stop spending money on foreign governments, foreign people. I get the desire, but as long as we have roads that are crumbling, that we have people that are homeless, people that are income scarce, food scarce, without healthcare, things, basic necessities, there's zero justification for sending our money elsewhere. It's pretty cut and dry.
No, good. That's what I wanted to hear too. I think that's important for people to know and talk about. So oftentimes we get wrapped up in the catchphrase issues that get put in the mailers, and some of these other things, it seems like they slip through the cracks. So Yeah, that's what I wonder. What would you do? Let's get into maybe, well, we're probably approaching the hour soon. Let's go a little rapid fire, maybe.
Okay.
How do you feel? Okay. What's the first thing you do on when you get into Congress? What are you looking to try and besides, you know, getting your desk organized, but you know, what do you hit the ground running?
Well, I think you have to find, you can't do anything alone. And that is just apparent. And I think number one would be to begin to, I don't want to say build a coalition, but find people who are willing to work with me that are working, that would work across the aisle. That's what's missing. That's the primary reason why we need independents, because there's virtually no cross aisle cooperation unless it's something that benefits both parties.
How do you describe Washington politics?
Short.
All right. One bill that you could pass. You have the authority, you could pass it, zero opposition. What's the bill or the context of the bill? What would you like to do? Is it be a budget?
Oh, balanced budget. Easy.
Yeah. All right. Political figure from the past or present, who do you admire?
Ron Paul, definitely. I think he was very, very principled. The current one, I don't agree with 100% of what anybody, literally anybody. And I think if somebody claims that they agree 100% with anybody, they're not looking hard enough for their line to themselves. But definitely Ron Paul was a big one. And the current one, I think Thomas Massie is right most of the time.
How about an issue that you think both parties should agree on? Where do you think there should be agreement between the parties? And something that should be get done, that needs to be done, and that there should be.
Gosh, you know, just fixing stuff that there just makes perfect sense. That's actually tough. Agree on. How about keeping money out of politics? Yeah, that's a good one.
All right. What's life like on the campaign trail? Real quick.
It is busy. I am constantly overwhelmed. Thankfully, I have been blessed with a ton of people who have come out of the woodworks across the U.S., which is, again, why I'm so optimistic. Just suddenly people started saying, hey, I like your message. Let me help. We need some change. And I'm trying to get to as many places as possible and talk to as many people, but it's an uphill hurdle because I keep getting told by all the gatekeepers, the classical gatekeepers, you know, the media companies and the TV and whatnot, independents are spoilers. You can't win. And I'm like, well, half Americans identify as independent. So
it's the largest party, or it's not necessarily a party. It's not a party. Sorry. It's not a party. It's the largest group.
Yeah. So I don't know if we can get everybody motivated enough to make them realize that we have the power, but we need to, because
I think you can. And I think it's the way that you're going about it, by common sense. And that's what the party seem to be missing, is common sense. So I think you can. It's the other obstacle is getting your message out there, because you said it's, you can't buy the advertising because you're not begging for the money, right? Mm-hmm. Or making promises to get the money. So
right.
Okay. How about a book or something motivational that you find inspires you a little bit? Maybe not a book or something that stuck with you.
Ooh, I've got a number. Mine again, I studied economics, so I'm kind of a nerd, and most of mine are pretty dreary. But Ron Paul wrote In the Fed, which is phenomenal. There's a neat one called Cult of the Presidency by Gene Healy, and it talks about the rise of the executive powers and how that has expanded over the years because the people keep saying, "Hey, the government needs to do something," and so it keeps encroaching on the legislative body, and Congress just says, okay, yeah, you can do that. And that's actually a good caveat there. There's a lot of things that the president has been able to do in recent years because Congress just sits back and lets them do it. And oftentimes people say, no, that's okay. It started, for example, for Katrina, there's no authority for the president to go in and do those things. But when the people want it, the Congress just sits back and says, okay. But then you have to remember, just because it's a president that might be your party or you agree with, would you be okay with somebody who you don't agree in that seat doing those same things? So I think with Trump, as divisive as he is, there's a lot of people, love him or hate him. He does things that really, really gets under the skin of some people. And these aren't necessarily things that he just created out of thin air. This has been a long process that we've allowed happen, or more properly, Congress has allowed happen, and we have allowed Congress to get away with it. So there's a lot of things that they need to reassert. War powers, for example, power of the purse. So
yeah,
we have to get principled people in Congress, or we're done.
What would you, what bit of advice would you give to somebody that's starting out? So they're hearing the interview, or they've had the feeling of maybe they need to run like you, right? And, to be successful, right, as hopefully you will be, or just to get started, what advice would you give to somebody that's considering running?
Don't do it. No. You can't do it by yourself. And so you need to reach out. And that's something we've got coming up actually over the next few weeks. We have a bunch of independent candidates for House and Senate, and even governor, if we can get them all herded together. But we're trying to show that we're not just a bunch of crazy voices off in the rafters screaming at you. There's a united effort we have. We don't necessarily agree on all the policy solutions, but we agree fundamentally that there's an issue. We have to get the partisanship out of it so we can begin to get the money out of it, and we can get the things out that are harmful for the people themselves. So you need to find friendly people to help you out. And they exist. It's just a matter of finding them and motivating them as well. And we need more of us. There's the more independent people run, the more apparent that it will become that independents are not spoilers. We're not the fringe. We are the majority. And we're coming for you.
Coming to help you.
Yeah. No, I was talking about the politicians. We're coming for the politicians.
Oh, coming for the politicians. Of course. Yeah, John, this has been great. How about, let's leave with a good, solid message that you want to, relay to people. What's your message of hope, or, what you promise to give, if you win? How do you want to wrap this, this great interview up? And I appreciate, I appreciate this.
Yeah, well, thank you. I would say sometimes it feels like we're up against an insurmountable hurdle, but you have to remember our history, where we come from. The American people are resilient, and we have been up against significantly worse. We have to remember that we, the people, it says it right there in our documents. We, the people, we have the power. This country is ours. It's not theirs. We can take it back anytime we want to. And it took, during the American Revolution, it was a small group of principled people who were fired up and got together and shared that vision of a better future, a better society, with the rest of the colonists at that time, and convinced them that they were able to stand up to the largest, most powerful empire on the planet, and they were successful. So the power is ours. All we have to do is stand together and say, no, enough is enough. We don't want you to be bought by outside interests. You have forgotten that you are supposed to be working for us. So we need to stand up together. If you are one like me who hasn't voted in over 20 years because you thought your voice didn't matter, well, it matters now more than ever, because we are losing the ability to speak. And so we have to reassert our authority. We have to go out there on, from our case, December 2nd, get out there and vote. If you've never voted before, get yourself registered and try it and see what happens. I mean, this is a short one. It's going to be 11 months, basically. Let me try it for 11 months. Let's see what I can do. That's like the perfect trial period. If you don't like it, hey, guess what? Go back to how we've been doing things for the last 170 years.
That's I love it.
So I think this is our opportunity. Let's do it. It's the power, the opportunity is in our hands.
John, thank you so much. Hey, what's the website? What's the John Thorpe website?
Thorpe for Congress. Yep, that's thorpeforcongress.com, T-H-O-R-P. And basically we're on every social media site as well, TikTok, Facebook, X, Instagram, you name it.
All right, excellent. And there's some other interviews out there as well, probably. I know I said I mentioned yep. I watched some, so you can look those up. And that's John with no H.
No H.
Right? Mm-hmm. No Correct. H. And no E. No E in Thorpe.
No E on yeah. Thorpe. They're just the best candidate name, don't I? It's so hard to say.
No, not at all. It's great. So, hey, listen, it's better than Michael Hahn. It's John Thorpe. Got a good name. Got a good ring to it, you know?
Yeah, and it'll probably show up as Jonathan solid. Thorpe on the ballot, too. So,
oh, Jonathan Thorpe.
I don't know. Right. I have no idea. I asked them to put John, but you never know.
My joke with my name is if I say it as the short, like Mike Hahn, it goes, you know, is this Mike on? Because it sounds like.
That's awesome. <this. laughs>
I got the microphone right here, by the way, for okay, good. You got the website. Guys, it's been a great conversation. Thank you for coming on. And we need more voices like yours and standing up as well. So speaking out one, standing up two, and getting this issue on the kitchen table for voters so that they can start discussing it as well, because word of mouth is what is going to save the day, so to say, because we're not going to get it through corporate media channels until word of mouth sends it there. So like, share, you know, tell your friends about the interview, tell them what we're doing at the 75, let them know about the special election in Tennessee that's coming up so they can check that out as well. And thank you to all our viewers and all our supporters. We couldn't do this without you. So thank you so much, John. Thank you again as well. And I wish you the best and look forward to, you know, staying in touch and seeing how this goes with you as well. So best to you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks. Take care, everyone. God bless.